being here. Sorry, we're getting started a little bit late, but we're going to go ahead and get started now. I've got 7:10. It is March 21st, and we are having our City Council meeting here in the Community Center. We are going to start with a pledge given by Scout Noah Bunker, and then we will have an invocation given by Councilmember Geddes. Noah, come on up.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we are indeed grateful for this opportunity to meet together tonight as City Council, the City Council meeting, and for those that are participating and observing, we ask thee that will help us to have a meaningful and productive meeting tonight, that we will be able to listen and make good, wise decisions for our city. We're grateful for the city that we live in, this state and country. And we ask thy blessings to be upon us in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
For that, and so I'm moving on to item number 2, I just need an approval of tonight's agenda.
I move we approve the agenda tonight.
I have an approval by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second? I'll second that. Seconded by Councilmember Anderson. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so we'll move on to item number 3, which is public comment. It looks like I do have one person who signed up for public comment, Catherine Franz.
For the agenda.
Oh, for item number 14. Okay, so we will do it. You want to wait till that moment to speak?
Either way.
It's up to you. You can wait till the end? Okay. All right. So we'll hold that for that part then and move on to item number 4, which is a report from Principal Sumner. Come on up.
Well, I first want to say thank you. We were scheduled to be for the last City Council meeting then. We all had something come up, so I want to apologize for us missing, but we're happy to be here. I'm joined with Christian Smith, one of my assistant principals. One of the other assistants is just had his wife just had a baby, so we excused him, and that was on vacation, and the other had obligations outside. So we're here, and we just want to briefly just say thank you for the partnership that we have with Cedar Hills. There's a great overlap of service where we work with the same patrons, the same people, and the kids in your community. We love working with them at Little Peak High School. We love what we do. We're excited to be there. If you drive by the school at any time of the day, there's typically cars in the parking lot, and it's been and it needs to be continue to be a city center or location where it's a joint effort where we work in partnership with our community. So. We appreciate Greg. We met with him over the summer with his team talking about the rent programs and the usage and the fields and all that. We want to make sure that partnership stays sound, and we appreciate the leadership that you guys have. My dad's a city councilman at Orem, and so I get it. We talk very often, and you know, we talk about jobs and different things that are happening. And it's a great service to our community for your time. To do what you're doing, so thank you. As far as the school goes, we have a gift for you. We have a t-shirt for everybody. I've got 10 of them. If you don't get one, Greg, you can stop by the school, or I can deliver a few more. But we'll just give the box to you, or here's what they are. I'll show you what they are. So we have a t-shirt for everybody that's just our Hope Peak High School, so we want to say thank you. So when you're in the community, wear this with pride and say, yeah, that's where we go. And so what I'll do is we'll just pass it out to everybody, and then if you don't get one, come see me, or if the sizes don't match, come exchange it, and we'll get you one of those. Also, just for sake of time, so I make sure we're sensitive to yours this evening as well, we have a stakeholder report that we want to present you with. Inside, it talks about our test scores. A few of the highlights in here is Lone Peak High School is It's known for being strong in all three areas, the academics, the arts, and athletics. And so when you're doing a comparison, was the winner of the best of state the last 2 years in a row. We have one of the highest graduation rates in the state. We are second by, I think it was 12 tests, by giving the number of AP tests for students. We're gonna catch them this year, I'm sure. But to give that many AP tests, that just shows the awesome kids we have and the awesome families we have in this community. We also have, with those number of tests, we are also one of the highest in the state and nation with proficiency or passing AP tests as well. So it's not just taking it, it's actually being proficient, being successful, as well as being very successful on the ACT test compared to other schools in the state. So those are some of the highlights here in the report. I'll pass this off to you guys, and we just, again, want to say, I can promise you in the fall, we'll be here earlier to introduce ourselves. Unfortunately, I've got three team members leaving this year from our admin. Christian being one of them, has accepted a position as principal at Polaris High School. So I can't even make a joke and say we're happy. We're going to miss him immensely. So
it's the alternative.
Yeah, I.
Thank you.
I like to cut jokes, but that's not one. We're sad to see Christian go. Dan Viola is also leaving. He's going to go to South High School, which is the other alternative school. And Tim Peed is unnamed of where he's gone, but we've heard that he is in the ball.
So there's a pool you'd like to pitch
in. Yeah. We could, yes. But that being said, again, thank you for the partnership. We will be back in the fall to introduce a new team to you. We'll have a new model t-shirt for you. And if there's any help or support you need from me, please don't hesitate to reach out. Leave my cell number. You have it, right? Share it with them. Like, or put it on the record, never would have it. Anyway, thank you for your support. Do you have any questions for me, or is that just enough for the report?
No questions for me, but I just wanted to say, share our things as well. We do hear from Greg how willingly you are willing to partner with us, especially when we need space for recreation programs and such, and so we appreciate your willingness to work with us on our community as well, so thank you.
Thanks.
Good question. I know I hear this from residents frequently. All of our city goes to Mountain Ridge Junior High, then it's split, a portion goes mostly, a portion goes to AM. I know you're not in control of that, but what is the official explanation for people asking? What is the explanation?
As far as enrollment for Lone
Peak? Why does all of our city go to Mountain Ridge Junior High, and then, you know, I think about 30-40% of our city is then split and goes to AM High School instead?
Yeah, correct. The last time I heard it was about 40% was it? Yeah. I think when the original boundaries were drawn, that was the initial, when it came up to balance the numbers of the high school. So, for example, they're setting a new high school out in Eagle Mountain, trying to draw those boundaries, and that's to create a balance so the numbers aren't heavy in one. Balance. They try to keep them fairly even. So if you look at the high school ranks to keep us all in the 6A rank, we have a couple hundred more than AF right now, but to keep that balance, that's why that happens. If the entire school of Mountain Ridge were to come to Lone Peak, we're at 26 now, that would push us closer to the 3 number. So it's just really balancing the numbers. Lone Peak's considered a closed school right now, but there's an out-of-area application that you can submit online, and we consider those individuals for students. So
I believe all 10th graders in our city can choose to go to Lone Peak, even if they're the AF boundaries, but then they have to stay there all 3 years. That's the way it is.
Yeah, there's a certain section that you can make the choice without getting going.
Jack, what did you say the enrollment is currently enrolling? Because I have people are passionate about that.
2,600.
How high is it been? Was it only 3 for a while?
No, I don't think Lone Peak's ever hit 3. We are one of the biggest schools. Westlake is by far the biggest. They're about 32 and climbing. We're kind of at a very flat rate of growth. So we're right. So our funding has stayed very flat, meaning our enrollment has stayed. We're actually projecting to grow a little bit, but 2,600 change is where we're sitting.
Is it pretty even split on the grades?
Yeah, it really is. Within 4th, 5th.
8, 30, 30.
Yeah. So big graduating classes. If you come to our graduation this year, we'll be the next place. Quickly, but respectfully, because we want to honor all those kids that go through. So, okay.
Thank you very much for being here tonight.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move on to item number 5, which is a public hearing for the amendments to the fiscal year 2018 budget. Is there anybody here who wanted to speak for the public hearing? No. Okay, so we will close the public hearing and move on to city.
The same. You're next.
He's a regular visitor.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll move on to city reports, starting with sorry. Mr. Greenwin.
I have a few items. So we just finished up Junior Jazz. We had 1,020 participants, which is our largest year we've had so far. And speaking of Lone Peak partnerships, we did partnership with the girls basketball team from Lone Peak this year. They were a great help to us. They reffed our games and a fundraiser for their program. So we really appreciate that partnership. Nancy Warner, their coach, is a Cedar Hills resident and worked with Greg to facilitate that. This Friday night is the dinner and dance. They still need 3 couples, so if you're looking for something interesting to do on Friday night, that's one. The feedback Greg says they're getting is that the dance on this dinner and dance is that the husbands don't want to dance. I think that's correct. So we do have some recreation programs that are starting up. We have tot soccer, kindergarten through second grade soccer, and teen soccer programs that are open. And T-ball and coach pitch registrations are also now open for summer. Greg and the recreation staff will be meeting with Cedar Ridge to discuss the upcoming family festival and changes that the committee is going to be making this year. And we also have youth computer coding classes that are set to start up for the summer months. So look for that registration as it's open as well. Ernie's is scheduled to open on April 1st. You may have seen on the city's website that our 2012 GEO bond rating was revised from AA to AA minus to AA, so we had a bond rating increase there, and that was based on strong financial and managerial processes. So thank you, Charles, and the finance department. This Saturday we have the Easter egg hunts, our annual Easter egg hunts. The children's Easter egg hunt is set for Heritage Park at 10 a.m. If you show up at 10:02, it'll be over, so get there early. And the teen event is at the driving range that same night at 8:30, so please be there. Spring cleanup is coming up on April 14th and the 21st. That will be from 7 a.m. to 12 at noon, and see the city's website for dumpster locations. And then finally...
Can I hear a comment?
Yes.
A couple of questions. So I know it says till noon 1 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Are they going to actually pick up at that time?
They rotate through the dumpsters. Last year when we did it, the dumpster filled, the truck came out, picked it up, dumped a new one. So they tried to keep...
So the last dump will go at...
noon, yeah.
Okay. Just trying to figure out how they're going to do that.
So, they bring in dumpsters as needed. They fill up pretty fast. And then work on Canyon Road has commenced, so look for people to be working on Canyon Road. So we would advise residents to be cautious as they travel north and south on Canyon Road. For information, see the city website and Utah County website for more information. Thank you.
Councilmember Miller.
One thing, about a week and a half ago, the beautification committee had a pruning workshop, and it was actually very well attended. They had over 30 people there learn how to prune fruit trees, and they're just working on some events. And to have the first event for this year, basically, or class, I should say, have such a good turnout is a good sign.
Thank you. Councilmember Anderson?
So I wanted to make a report from my committees, but I just wanted to report that last night, as we all know, was caucus night, and our caucus and Brian's as well met in this building last night. I just wanted to commend the staff at this building. Donna was our hostess last night, and ours went off without a hitch. It was perfect, and she was such a great hostess, and the evening was a success because of the preparation that went into it by the people that work here in this building. And so I wanted to say thank you for helping that night run smoothly. I think that's an honor.
Thank you, Councilmember Geddes.
For
me, I just wanted to, Chairman just mentioned about the bond rating improvement from AA minus to AA, and I just wanted to express appreciation to Charles and the finance team. That really does reflect on his efforts in the finance department, and I know that we've, I think I heard that we received the Distinguished Budget Award. When I say we, I mean you received the Distinguished Budget Award once again this year. So thank you for all of your efforts and for helping us continue to improve with our rates further. That helps quite a bit. Thank you. And then we had our emergency management meeting town hall last week, and Laura did a fantastic job. I think we had, do you know how many people showed up, Greg?
Over 1,000
people. Every year we have so many more people that show up. So it was a fantastic event. Once again, many people came through. So again, thank you to staff for putting that on as well. I did attend, I did listen to the meeting at the Utah State Developmental Center Board met a few weeks ago. And just as an update for all of you, the state legislature did pass the bill that allows them to either lease or sell the land south of Lone Peak for the building of the Murdoch Connector Road and also the development of that land there. So their board now is discussing what that looks like. They have an RFQ that the Attorney General has at this point to sign off on, and then they'll be sending that RFQ out to developers to do that development they want, which has quite a bit of housing and some commercial. So the board did state that they wanted the communities to have provide some feedback. So I spoke with the project manager, and he said that he would be, before the end of the month, would be scheduling a meeting with myself, Chandler, Mayor Mann, and Mayor Frost, as well as their city managers, to discuss what this looks like and what it means for our community, so we can share whatever concerns that we have, feedback that we have. So if there's anything you want me to share, in addition to what I've already shared with you as far as concerns or thoughts or feedback, please let me know. But I will let you know how that goes. You might have to come up with some game plan at that point based on how that meeting goes. So I will follow up with you on that.
Can I ask one question?
Absolutely.
So is the road not going to go first?
It's supposed to, but that really depends. So if it is classified as a connector road and it meets all the criteria to be a collector road, then MAG has already said that they will fund it. That's already approved. However, the board has said that they want it to be a two-lane, 25-mile-an-hour road. If for whatever reason that no longer meets the requirements to be classified as a connector road, then MAG cannot fund it. If MAG cannot fund it, it then is left to Highland and the developer to figure out how that's funded, and it can't happen. So I don't know yet. A lot of that's still up in the air as to what that road's going to look like, and if it can be classified as a connector, even at 25 miles per hour in two lanes, I don't know. And if it's not a connector, MAG cannot fund it. So that's still happening. That those discussions are still happening. But I will let you know.
That's the biggest feedback I can say too.
Maybe like collector. And then the last thing is, once a month I meet with a group of some other mayors in nearby cities, and then the Forest Service and National Park Service. It's called the AF Canyon Working Group. A member of Protect and Preserve American Fort Canyon is also invited to that, just to discuss the future of American Fort Canyon and the issues that they're seeing. This last meeting that I attended, they were really just focused on ways to communicate with the general public on peak hours or times that the canyon might be shut down, especially since American Fort has a water line project that's going in, they're installing some fiber. So we just instructed that if they have feedback that they want to, or communication they want to share with our residents, I gave up Mike Parsons' email. So you might start seeing little tidbits in our weekly updates or in our newsletter from the Forest Service or from the National Park Service, specifically related to American Fort Canyon. So they're working on a communications plan to better spread the word on various issues that they're facing in the canyon. That's it for me, Councilmember Ellsworth. Councilmember Bailey.
The 911 dispatch had a meeting with this.
Okay. So we will close the city reports, and I actually have a recommendation if the council is fine because I know we already approved the agenda and we Joel James Gresh on here, but my recommendation would be that somebody make a motion that we actually move items 10 and 14 above number 8, just since we have individuals here to discuss those items. So, okay, we do that afterwards. Council, are you fine with that?
Yes.
So, if someone make a motion?
I will. I move that we move items 8. No,
sorry, 10 and 14.
10 and 14 in front of item 8.
A motion by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second? Second by Councilmember Geddes. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, then we will move on to item number 10, which is a discussion on the Cultural Arts Citizens Advisory Committee budget. And I believe, Jordan, are you presenting?
Yes.
All right.
All right. Hi, good evening. My name is Jordan Long. Just so you know a little bit about me, I serve as the artistic director for the Creekside Theater Fest here in Cedar Hills, as well as I teach the youth theater classes that we have here in this building. And just to give you a little bit of update on those two projects, just real briefly, as you may or may not be aware of them and what's going on there. But the youth theater program we started about 3 years ago through the Recreation Department under Greg, and it started out, at first we weren't sure how many kids would do it, but it has, over the last few years, quickly grown into the largest youth theater program in the state of Utah. We had to put a hard cap this semester at 100 kids weeks before we even started the classes, as kids are coming from all over to want to participate in Cedar Hills Youth Theater. About 60 to 70% of the kids who participate are Cedar Hills residents. And then the other 30 to 40% come from, we have students who come from Eagle Mountain, Linden, Orem, Salt Lake City, who want to come down and participate in Youth Theater. It's been tons of fun. We've had premieres that they give us. Currently, we're working on the Utah State premiere of the new junior version of Mary Poppins. So you'll be able to see that at the State Developmental Center at the Valentine Theater. That is coming out April 13th through the 16th. So we're really excited about that. And like I said, we've got 100 kids working on that show, and it's tons of fun. So the other thing there, and the main reason that we're here talking with you tonight, is the Creekside Theater Fest. So Nicole and I kind of came up with this idea a few years ago because we wanted to bring, you know, theater and community theater to Cedar Hills. And we had this beautiful little amphitheater in Heritage Park. And so we started chatting about that, and we started thinking about what does Utah County not have when it comes to theater, because there's a lot of theater in Utah County. And we kind of came up with two things. They don't have a beautiful outdoor venue, and they don't have a space or a semi-professional theater that does shows that you don't see everywhere else. In Utah County, you get a lot of the same shows, and a lot of that is because that's what sells tickets. And one thing that we wanted to do is we wanted to bring family-appropriate shows to Utah County that you didn't get to see a lot. And this year, we're planning on producing a new adaptation of the play The Giver, as well as a production of William Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, and also a lesser produced version for children of The Frog Prince by David Mamet. So that's kind of what we're doing there. A couple years ago, it started small. Last year, we decided to start giving our actors gas stipends, what we call them. And that kind of turned it into this semi-professional world of theater where performers could come for a small stipend and perform for us. So it continued to bring in Cedar Hills residents, but what it also did is started to bring in kind of big name actors from around the state. We have gotten, over the last couple of years, I just wanted to real briefly read just one or two snippets from reviews from the leading theater review companies in the state of Utah, because they really love the venue. One reviewer said, I quote, "This was one of the best locations I have ever been to see theater." One said, "The Creekside Theater Fest will hopefully look fondly back at this inaugural season for many, many years from now. One said, seeing a play in the open air on a Utah County summer night certainly beats the crud out of watching the upcoming remake of a movie based on a comic book coming out to a megaplex in their year. So let's go Creekside. Yeah, that's what it says. But they're all over, and the reviewers love it, and we love it, and it's tons of fun. Here's the thing. We work really hard to make it financially viable. As far as I'm aware, we're one of very few theaters in the state of Utah that state and the like. It's been especially hard this last year with the care tax not passing, and so we lost some money on the budget, which made it difficult as we had also just moved to trying to pay these actors to come in and perform. And so I believe you have with you our proposed budget. I want you to know, typically the average cost to produce a single show in the state of Utah at a community level theater is usually about $5,000 to $10,000. And our goal with this budget is to produce 3 shows for less than that. And we can do it. We just need a little bit more help with that budget to be able to bring those to be able to redo our set is one of the big things. We built a set 2 years ago, and we've used it for a couple of years, and now it's starting to get kind of warped and possibly not as safe for the actors to be on anymore. We'd like to replace that set. We'd also like to be able to do some more advertising, because that's one thing that we haven't been able to do the last couple of years with the budget. And so you've got that in front of you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Anyways, thank you. We love it here.
Mr. Goodwin, will you present on the budget request?
Tonight?
For this. I actually saw that you're actually the presenter.
Oh. Well,
so
I can, yeah, I can quickly come up and talk about it.
So I believe the request they made was for to have $9,040. Is that what it was exactly? I don't know.
Something
in that ballpark.
That's what I see.
I believe that the current preliminary budget shows an increase of $6,000 going to the arts, or sorry, to the arts committee. And Charles can correct me if I'm wrong. So right now we're funding this increase, and that's why we wanted to have this committee come present what they're going to do with the money, just because we feel it's important for any committee that's going to be expending city funds to show what they're doing with the city funds and what the plan is for them to come here. So you'll see as part of Charles' presentation another breakdown of what the Parks and Trails Committee is going to be doing as well with their proposal. So we appreciate the Jordan and presenting to PS right now. We are proposing a $6,000 rating of $2,000.
Thank you. So, Council, questions for Jordan and Nicole or Chandler?
So, obviously, the park tax or care tax is partly for the arts.
Correct.
And they were receiving funding previously, previous to the expiration, correct?
Correct.
And then, obviously, that. Funding went away at least for the last year. Will part of that be going back to help the additional funds?
That's where this money's coming from. We felt like it was important that the park tax, care tax, or whatever acronym you want to use, be used in a widespread manner to reflect the widespread interests that are in the community, not just park or rec, but also the arts.
Right.
So it's not all sixes and equal, but
sure.
We did feel like we needed to promote other activities or their agendas. So that's why we're seeing it.
Thank you.
Are there any other sources of funding for this, such as like sponsorships, ticket sales, donations?
They do new ticket sales, I believe. I don't know that there's ever been a real drive to sponsorships. I believe there probably would also be grant money available for our local community arts that the city could look into. To be honest though, right now, we're a little stripped in on investigating grants, but in the future, I think that's something that could be on the table as a staff director.
I think it's a great idea. I fully support this effort. They're really easy to discuss and watch out. So, yeah, if we can keep it rolling and grants, we definitely help.
Well, I love the fact that we have opportunities for the kids in our community who sports isn't their thing, but this is something else that, that we offer that they can do. And 100 kids, that's a big group.
Can I plug in?
Absolutely.
I just want to recognize Jordan and Nicole for the amazing job that they've done with this program. It's to Jordan's credit, like you said, they have grown it, and it's we have to turn people away, and it's all credit to them and the job that they've done. So I just want to recognize them for that.
My kids attended their shows last summer and loved that. So I'm a fan. I think it's a great thing to support, and I'm so glad we got the part-time staff so we can help.
Yeah, I just want to say, make sure you spend that $500 for advertising, because I think that's probably where we were probably short. I don't know how well their attendance, I did not attend, but I'd love to see bigger crowds. So, if you haven't had an advertising budget before, let's make sure you spend this on advertising. I need the word out. I'm excited to attend this year, so. Thanks.
Any other questions or feedback from council? Anything else you wanted to share with us? Nicole, you've been very quiet.
I
know you better than that.
No, it's been an awesome opportunity. It's been an awesome opportunity to be a part of bringing theater to Cedar Hills. And to see both the Youth Theater grow and also Creekside Theater Fest grow. I've been an actress, you know, a lot in my life. So I've been able to actually be a part of the shows. So we would love to have more people, even in the city, to come and audition and be a part of it. Our audition dates are April
34th.
Yes. So if anybody knows anybody that would like to audition, it's a great opportunity. But it's also family friendly, and so kids can come and enjoy the shows. But it's been an awesome opportunity for them. So.
Do you know your actual dates now on the shows?
Yes.
We do. So you should probably get them on our city calendars.
They are. Yeah, I talked to Mike. He has it all reserved. They should be on the calendar. Yes, they're on the calendar. So they're in June. June, I think, because the family festival started a little bit later. We have started a little bit later. So we did conflict. We have also discussed, possibly doing something in conjunction with the Family Festival on one of the nights that are being used. We'd love to do something like that in the future. So,
June 15th through the 30th.
Yes. And then it's done in reps. So now that we have three, two of them, the Frog Prince is a lot shorter, so we'll do that on the same night as another. But they are in reps, so they're back to back. It'll be, you know, one show, the next show will be another night. So you can go and see three shows in our park, totally different shows, on different nights. It's a great opportunity. And beautiful. It's gorgeous. When the creek is running, we utilize the creek for the show, so it even brings it more to life, and it's a lot of fun. So,
All right, well, this is a discussion item only, so there's not a vote that needs to be taken right now. Any other questions or feedback? All right, thank you both for coming today. Okay, so we will move on to item number 14, which is a discussion on the use of Timpanogos Cove Park as a dog park. And Catherine, you wanted to give public comment. So I'm going to have you come to the microphone. I do need you to start with providing your name and your address, and then you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments.
My name is Catherine France. I live at 9218 Canyon Heights Drive, the fabulous Canyon Heights neighborhood. Is this on?
Yes.
So I have two dogs, an old Labrador Retriever. She's 11 and she has bad hip dysplasia. She can hardly walk, but according to her vet, she needs to get out. She needs to do what she can. Our next dog is a two-year-old Labradoodle, full of tons of energy, absolutely needs to run for our sanity. She just gets into everything, so much fun, but she's got to get that energy out. So for the past 2 years, ever since we got our little player, I've been taking her in the morning up to Timpanogos Cove Park because it's an ideal setting as a dog park. I can walk around the circle, the dogs come play in the middle. Our old dog just sits on the grass most of the time, and our young dog runs. I have an electronic collar so that the young dog doesn't go outside of those boundaries. But I decided it's time that we make it legal, because I have been having them off leash. So, and I would like to propose that we have the Tip River Lewis Cove Park made into a dog park just for certain hours, like every morning at 6 to 9 a.m. I'm not the only one that goes up there. I've made four to, you know, there's, it varies, but there's four people that meet up there every morning that we've just met at the park. They bring their dogs and do the exact same thing. So, that's what I'd like to propose, is that it's made into a dog park and ends at 9 a.m. before the kids come and start playing.
Thank you. Mr. Goodwin, you're presenting.
There isn't a dog park in Utah County, by the way. Not a single.
There's a residence home being built right here. This is the entrance and from the south parking lot. And then there's a restroom here with the loop, I think it was referenced right here, that the dogs can play in right here. She's right. There are no real dog parks in Utah County. They're not around here. You can go to Salt Lake to the nearest one. But the staff was researching some of the issues related to dog parks, let's just go through some of that. One of them is the proximity to residents. It can be a nuisance to have dogs playing really close to your home, but in this case, this area right here is probably about 200 feet from the nearest residence to the west, and on the south, you're looking at as much as 700 feet from the nearest resident, the resident to the south. 200 feet to the residents of the west, plus 700 feet to the residents of the south. So you've got a bit of a distance there. In other communities, when they've established a dog park, they've been destination parks for a lot of people. They become destination parks for a lot of people in the area. And one concern the staff has, if that is the case, we don't feel like we have adequate parking here for that type of facility. If this is the only dog park in Utah County, ideally, your dog parks are located within walking distance of your home, so you walk to the park, but dog walk home. In this case, you walk within walking distance to a certain number of residents, but it would be a destination for a lot of dog owners in the area. And then one other thing I want to pull up. This was a survey done by a community, I believe, out of California. But I think that the sentiment that is shared here would be applicable to Cedar Hills as well. In this case, you see the orange, it's hard to read there, but it says most important, and the blue is least important. This line right here is cleanliness and maintenance. So you see that that is by far and away the issue when it comes to dog parks. This would be the concern of staff, so the main concern of staff, is that as a dog owner, if you use a dog park, that it would be used wisely, that we're not leaving a mess for people later in the day. And then proximity to the play areas, you see there's some play areas on Tim Cove Park, but there's the grass area. Let me go back to the map. But there's a swing set play area here, there's a play set here, and Catherine's resident referencing this grass area here. When looking at other dog parks, they're very much fenced off, just because of the liability that you face having a dog off the chain. So staff went up to this park and took a walk around, and I appreciate Charles taking the time out of his day to go through this. And there's a spot, and I know it's not finished yet, but I think it could be possibly developed into a type of a dog park area for dogs to run around in. It's about a half an acre right back here, where it could be fenced off with a certain type of fencing that has imagine a two-gate system to open the door, open the gate, let the dog in without letting another dog out. Most dog parks also have a small dog area and a large dog area, so you can put your dog where it would be most safe. But then as we look at this, some issues that may come up are drainage, and then obviously cleaning up, maintain in a dog park area. The other nice thing about this area right here is with the bathroom right here, there would be easy access to put in a water fountain for the dogs. So there's some options. So as staff's looked into this, and it's only been a couple of days, and we've kind of just done some real quick research, so I apologize if this seems a little preliminary, but we do feel like there could be some potential here for long-term development of a dog run area for dogs to be off leash. But the residents' request is for the use of this land as an off-leash area during certain times of the day. That survey that I showed, if you look at it,
I'll show you the same question. Right.
It's right here. It's hard to see again, I apologize. But this is what time of day do you or would you likely most use a dog park? This is 6 to 9 a.m. This is 9 to 12. This is noon to 4. This is 4 to 7. This is 7 to 10. So you see that in this case, the highest demand for a dog park was actually as people are coming home from work and wanting to probably go out and relax and not get out of, shake out of a long day's work. So 6 to 9 may accommodate some, but in the long term, it might be even a better option to develop a long-term dog park, if this isn't something the city council wishes to do, so that it accommodates residents during any time of the day. That's kind of where we are as a staff. I know this is really preliminary, but I wanted to get your feedback on where we go from here.
So, Chandler, there actually is a dog park at Bicentennial Park in Provo. It's kind of South Provo.
Okay.
And what it is kind of what you described. It's a fenced-off area. I think it's just probably a 3-foot chain link fence. And a green chain link, you know, painted. And then it's mostly just an open area. I think it's mostly dirt. And then there's benches in there as well. And I don't recall there being a designation between large and small dogs, but an open area, and if I were to guess, it would probably be quarter acre, third of an acre. So it's not huge. When I've seen it, there's a lot of dogs in there and a lot of people, and it's very much used. It's definitely being used, and maybe there's some others that we just don't know about. But there are two concerns when it comes to dogs in public. One is the safety issue, and then the other one is the sanitation and the cleanliness. You know, not everybody cleans up after themselves. If we have kids rolling up onto the grassy areas right after dogs have been there, there's a stinky situation. So, how's everybody doing, Joe? How's everybody doing? So I would like to see a solution for dog owners. I think that it's needed. We've thrown around St. Andrew's Estates, obviously to produce a dog park that's fenced off would cost some money. I don't think it would be insanely expensive, but you know, the city would have to be willing to support that. So with this idea, whether it's a temporary or permanent fix, I mean, I think that the hours are fine if people are actually going to use it. You know, then I think it reduces the off-leash liability issue, but I'm still concerned about the cleanliness and the moving the park in what condition.
Yeah, can I just respond to a couple of those. Yes, I think that the biggest liability with the city is having dogs off-leash, because at the same time it's still a park. It's just tonight you could have kids, especially in summer would be the time worried the most about is that the day heats up, parents probably will like to go early in the morning to the park rather than in the heat of the day. And I know that if cleanliness and maintenance of the park is that big of an issue for this community, this survey, it means that a number of these residents that have been to dog parks that were not maintained. So in that regard, we're having to figure out how to maintain this dog park on staff.
That's a large area.
And it's a large area to go hunting through. So as we've looked into it, the cost of fencing off an area, and the way we've talked about it in the last couple of days is probably as a phased approach, fencing off an area, installing some water. And then, you know, possibly, we thought that people would really want to have some items in the ducks run, jump, climb on, but the survey that we looked at was in support. It was cleanliness, walkability, drinking. So we can address most of those concerns, but my big, going back to sanitation, is if you do allow dogs in this area, you may have situations later in the day. And not only that, if it is heavily utilized, then we have the opposite problem. If people are being really responsible, then we have a trash can full of the leftovers every morning that we have to go take care of. So there's a number of issues. I really appreciate the resident reaching out to the council member. I think this is a really great discussion because in the development of Harvey Park, we've had a number of residents reach out to us saying, we want to see a dog park. This is something that people want. The question is where's the best place and how's the best way to do it?
So I'm all for putting the fenced-in area over here. I think that's a brilliant idea, especially with water right there. And you know, whatever else we would do with that. Even if that will take time to get in place, I'm also in favor of an idea of saying your dog must be on leash between 9 a.m. and 7 p.m. at this park. I don't think the cleanliness issue doesn't come so much to the forefront of my mind, simply because people have taken their dogs there so far, and what has the situation been so far? I'm sure people are cleaning up after their dogs, or if they miss one, there might be one there already that's been missed. So that might be a good issue on that.
I'll keep touching that. I haven't gotten complaints about this area right here, and that's probably because it's only a few residents using right now.
Right.
However, as you drive down this road, down Hazel's Hollow, there's a retention basin on the south side of the road there, and I have got complaints about a number of dog bones being left there.
Okay, so I think for the proper signage, and maybe even one of the dispensers for tags or whatever there.
There is a dispenser.
There's
already one there.
Can I just? I've read a lot about dog parks the last few days, and one of the things that cities do sometimes, especially when there's limited parking like this, and they don't want the If we're the only one in North Utah County, there would be. I was talking to the guy that gave me the fencing quote, which was about $7,000 for 400 square feet, or 12,000 for 800 linear feet, plus 350 per acre. And he was telling me how his wife and him from Eagle Mountain were looking for dog parks and they went to Draper because that was the nearest one. People are looking where these are, and they're going to come, and there's going to be, he said it was packed. And so some cities require a pass through the city. They have to get a card or a key fob, and they actually get to enter the gate. It says their dogs have been vaccinated, their dogs, and they pay maybe $45, but it kind of puts some kind of boundaries on how many people, and it puts responsibility that they're going to obey the rules and different things, because it really is, it can really get out of control if other cities around us don't have them. And so you want to consider the neighbors. Do you want, will those neighbors, you'll have a lot more complaints. I think now from those neighbors that have cars parked in front of them every day, every night during the summer, than you do for not having a park. So you got to keep that in mind. How are you going to control the traffic?
Nice.
So.
In a really good journey, because of the lack of the dog parks, it really could turn into a regional destination, at least the northern part of the county. And while you may want to consider that park for temporary fix, I'd prefer to see it like at Harvey Park, where it's more of a destination.
Heard many of you saying this, but when I was talking to Charlotte, we're brainstorming some places. When the Harvey Park's fields are put in, and there's a plethora of fields, it might be worth it to use the north end of Skeet Soccer Park. That's on the portion that's it's flat, it's grass, there's water already there, there's parking. Or it opens up a portion of that and get a dog park. I think the city has some options. I know that in the past, St. Andrews has been tossed out. I get nervous anytime a park is proposed there just because of the number of golf balls you'll find going through there. So that becomes an additional liability. There are a certain number of rules, and Charles touched on a few of them, but some of the cities that, as they've adopted dog parks, they've said that dogs must have current registration, license, and vaccinations, and then the users of the dog park assume liability by using the dog park. That no more than two dogs per handler. Dogs and puppies under 4 months of age are not permitted to the park. Dog handlers are required to clean up and dispose of their dog waste. So they set a certain standard that is meant to be followed. The only problem with that is then you're adding something else that you have to enforce at some level.
Councilmember
Anderson,
Mr. Jordan, any other questions?
Yeah, I mean, Harvey Park's, it's not there yet. This park is here. I mean, my suggestion is to try and do something here. And what's wrong with maybe having two dog park locations in our city and divide up the dogs? I mean, if we put in a temporary dog park, kind of an experiment to see what happens in this location inside the loop for now, and do it on an experimental basis, see if the owners are going to clean up between their dogs, see if we have any issues. And in the meantime, work on doing an enclosed dog area. It seems like that's the least expensive route at this point, is to enclose that area. There's already the water, the parking, and there's not a lot of parking. And maybe that would inhibit people from coming if they know they have nowhere to park. Maybe it's just a remunerable thing. I like Charles' idea that you talked about the key fob. And maybe you limit how many passes you issue to the park. You know, if you're going to go that fog route, you say, okay, we limit the passes to this number so we don't have, everyone in North Utah County trying to come through. Those are my thoughts.
I think you'd have to limit it to residents, but you couldn't exclude any residents. You see those residents. You'd have to give everybody in Cedar Hills a pass.
So you couldn't put it on the number. But you could just limit it to Cedar Hills.
But even then, I don't think it goes back to enforcement. I just don't know. I know staff and I've read all the time.
So, question for you though.
Just limits enforcement. Like, you're going to say, oh, never mind.
If we did allow, and I don't know if this is a question for Mr. Goodwin or Mr. Wright, but if we did allow the 6 to 9 just in the open area, and let's say some children were there at 8 and someone does get hurt by a dog, if we have basically stated, you don't have to follow leash laws during that time and someone gets hurt, is the city then liable for that child or person becoming hurt because we've set the law as a blank?
I'm going to defer it to
it should be, but the fundamental freedom of America is really to sue everyone. And frequently, we are targets because we have money. You sue other people when we are lucky to get $5,000. You sue us. We're a taxpayer entity, so thus we have substantial resources. So, for example, let's say, you know, there was a $1 million verdict and we were found 5% liable. You know, then the plaintiff might collect $50,000 from us. You know, the $950,000 folks collect from the dog owner, they might collect, you know, $900. So people always add the city to those kind of things. But with that said, that the laws are really quite clear that you are strictly liable for your dog. And so it doesn't matter how dumb your dog is or whatever it is, you're liable. Even if a kid comes up and pats it without asking permission, you're liable. And so I think it's a modern, I mean, any park we build, you know, kids play baseball or soccer,
right. We're
all at risk. I don't think this is an inordinate risk compared to what we're taking now.
Okay. And, you know, and someone could get bit inside of the fence enclosure. So I don't know that that's really an issue that could happen anywhere.
We probably would want signage at least that says enter at your own
risk.
If you want to use this as a dog park, you are now accepting all responsibility or something like that. So let me just weigh in. When this came up, it's interesting because I was just in Arizona a few weeks ago, and there was a dog park, and his brother and I actually stopped because he's a huge dog lover, and I love dogs, but I don't have one anymore. But they do have the double gate. It's about a 3-foot-high fence. It was all grassed. Tons of people were there. I mean, they were throwing frisbees to their dogs, and, you know, it looked like a lot of fun. You know, they had the dispenser for the, you know, pick up the stuff, and it just seemed like a success. And so I'd love to see that. I agree with Denise. I think we could do this. I mean, this is just discussion, but I think we could propose to allow it on a temporary basis, and let's just see how it goes. You know, just because it's kind of like, I remember we originally put the temporary stop sign at Harvey and 4500 West or whatever that is now, where that big speed bump is. And it's been there for 3 years now. So, you know, it seems to be working, is what I'm saying. I mean, we could review it later. I like that idea. I think we should get somewhere in our city, whether it's St. Andrews, whether it's here, whether it's part of our being. But I think in the meantime, we could probably come up with a temporary idea with signage and without expense.
Sorry, Mayor and Council, one of the considerations as we was looking at those areas and looking at other dog parks in the area, most of them are flat or terrain. And one of the considerations with public facility would be providing ADA access. If we put them in an area where it's steep slopes, et cetera, where they don't have the access to get in and clean up and take care of their animals, then we may have a consideration that we need to not overlook in that aspect.
So, Council, this is a discussion item only of a vote taken tonight, but if there is some direction you want to give staff as far as further research you want them to do or direction you want them to take.
Well, I'd like to see some sort of resolution for a temporary situation to see how it works. And I would love to pursue putting the dog park area here in this park. And at Harvey, I don't know why we only need one.
I welcome that. What I'm kind of taking some notes and just kind of bounce some ideas off you. Creating an experimental situation where we come up with some hours of operation, kind of a litmus test of how we're going to monitor it, what the effects, kind of like what we expect to see, what we actually see, what standards are expected, rules to be followed, and then we need to find out exactly what expenditure are required from the city in order to use an experimentation. Because it's a science, the dog bag station is an extra garbage can, what is required of the city. Come back to the council with a plan for that, as well as maybe a long-term option on fencing off an area, what it would actually require, because it's easy to fence off an area and put it down, but it means that you have to include ADA access all the way to the top of that for the game structure.
I think some of it's flat. I think that's okay. As long as there is a flat area, I think we're okay.
And then, the dog park that I took on, it was completely turf grass. That was nice. I think long term, that's what he's talking about.
So we don't have a council meeting until the 17th.
I don't know how we're paying for it.
So this is, it gives the staff some time to come up with some ideas for this.
So can I ask Catherine a question? So the people that go and take their dogs to the park, do you want to come up here? Sorry. Are you disposing of the waste in the trash can at the park?
Yes.
So I wonder if there's a haul out, you know, like pack in, pack out kind of deal. Because I'm worried about the trash can filling up with doggy doo in this experiment. But what if there was some sort of way to ask people who bring their dogs to bring it home and get rid of it?
Yeah.
I know you want to cart it around in your pocket all day, but
if that's what it takes, I'd be happy to do that. It is nice to just get rid of it. Yeah, and there is, people do not, they're not excellent at cleaning up. So I thought if we do this experiment, I would really spread the word to at least my friends and me that we need to really watch out for the whole park, not just clean up after our own dogs. That's right.
Any other feedback or direction from the council? Staff. All right. And we will move on back to item number 8, which is a review action on entering into an agreement with Qualtrics. Mr. Goodwin, you are presenting.
The people we've been working with from Qualtrics have not been able to make it tonight, so I apologize if you just have to listen to me on this one. But let me give you a little bit of history. As the city's tried to, in years past, and when I say years past, like going back more than a decade, the city has done every year they've done a survey, one giant survey where they paid about 10 grand to a surveying firm to kind of get a good pulse of the community, what's going on, what the residents' priorities are. Get feedback on city services, city programs, city events, and it's really been a useful tool that has allowed staff to redirect focus where it needs to be. And it's actually been, I want to say, going on 3 years since we've done one now. We call it the decision survey. Like the last one we did was in 2015. So Qualtrics is a local firm you may know, and they've come and presented before, but they've given us an offer of a year of contract with them that I feel like is more than fair. And I'd like to explore using this contract as an opportunity to supplement or to take over what we used to do as a decision survey. So it's going to be a little bit different where we used to pay $10,000 and do one survey. This is $6,000 and we can do as many surveys as fits in 5,000 responses. And with that, That's a number of quite large surveys that we can target to a number of different audiences as this staff, as mayor and council sees fit. One nice thing about Qualtrics is they not only have experience with local government, they have experience with local governments. They work with a lot of the cities and government entities that are around us. They're local, so they can be on site for customer service rather than on the phone or via web. So the kind of the users on this one are employee engagement, we can do internal surveys with the employees, we can do customer satisfaction surveys. We have a number of different types of customers, whether it's utility customers, whether it's golf customers, whether it's recreation customers. There's a number of different people that we can reach out to for what we could see as good information, as well as a general resident surveys that can help direct priorities. You may remember last council meeting where we awarded the RFP for waste management, for waste collection to waste management. The reason that we knew that waste management had stellar reviews within the community was because of the decision survey. So I feel like in order to keep tracking where our performance levels are, it's important to get that kind of feedback. And Qualtrics allows us to do that at a cheaper rate than we've done in the past with surveys, surveying companies. It is a highly rated platform.
it's the ability to survey across platforms. What they've told us is that you can kind of select your audience. So people self-select into certain categories that they then want to receive surveys on. So if a resident is interested in rec programs, but not necessarily golf, they can select that. So anytime we're doing a rec program survey, they can receive be the recipient of it. So it's a relevant survey to the interest that the items that interest them. Provo has done this a lot, and it's been very successful for them as they've dealt with issues such as solar panels on homes. The other thing is that the target surveys are relevant to the end users in that the information that we're getting is from the actual people that are using the amenity or the service. And then, so like I said, I'm proposing to do this as a one-year trial to see how it works, how it integrates with the staff that we currently have, and just kind of what the results are. Funding for this can be paid for out of the current year. So we're not budget amending anything for the upcoming year. It's in excess in the some money that we've saved in the professional technical budget that we can use this year to fund this and then kind of use it as an experiment. I know that there are other competitors out there, but I think given the locality of Alteryx and the fact that they've knocked off half the price of their agreement for us, is says how much they want to work with us on this. So, what questions do you have?
Can I add a few things to that? So I've been around for two decision surveys, and I just want to give the council some insight into that. We spent, I think they were $10,000 each, and the responses, the number of responses that we had were around 600. And I think about 600 is the highest number of responses we've ever received on any survey that we've ever issued. So here we're getting 6,000 responses. 5,000 responses for $6,000, and more responses for less money, which allows us to do multiple surveys. And then Councilmember Bailey and I were talking about how do we use these surveys? How is that data actually utilized? And so I know from my perspective how we've used the decision surveys in the past or when we've done a Qualtrics survey before. I know Inside Design, when they came up with Harvey Park, it was based on a survey that we put on our website and sent out to residents, the park survey, saying, what would you like? First of all, why do you come to our parks? And what are the things that you would add to our parks if you had a chance? And what kinds of things would you be willing to bond for? That's when we asked about the swimming pool and said, and gave pictures saying, if it was this big and this much money and this is how much was going to increase your taxes, would you be willing to bond for it? So, Insight used all of that feedback from the survey that we did to come up with that concept design for Harvey Park based on the survey that we had sent out to residents. I know that we also changed our communication methods with residents based on the decision survey we did in 2012. That's when we started seeing that people were saying they were reading the newsletter a lot less than they were in the past, and so that's when we started creating our social media accounts. We transitioned from paper statements to our electronic statements and started moving away from those to more advanced communication. Our commercial zone, when we were doing, going through the change in our design guidelines and such, we based a lot of what we were going to allow there, what it was going to look like based on the decision survey and what residents were saying that they wanted to come to Cedar Hills. And then Family Festival, that's another thing that we've asked, is what are the things that Family Festival that you like the most? That's how we know fireworks are the number one thing, because it was in our decision survey, and so that helps the Family Festival committee, as they're talking about budget, to know these are the things that we have to have, and these are the things that are not as important to residents. And so I think that we've done a good job of taking the feedback and the communication we get from residents when we survey and implementing that into our decisions that we're making on big scale. So I think this is a good deal. And I know that when Councilmember Zappala was here, we used Qualtrics a few times because he had access to it. But the reporting seems very...
And they have one thing to note, that they have PhDs on staff that help you design surveys that are statistically relevant, so you're not asking leading questions. But also, one issue that we've done with the decision survey is the amount of data that you're trying to get from people makes it a long survey. Well, these can break up those surveys into digestible portions that residents are more likely to complete. You know, somebody says, do you have 30 minutes to speak with me about a survey? You're probably going to say, no, not tonight, not any night. But if it's 5 minutes on something that you care about, you're probably more likely to give your response. So I feel like that is also a big plus. You know, I mean, if you, we've done a number of surveys in the past, we did one for the general plan as well, that may recently not mentioned, but we've used surveys as a real method of how, what's the sense of the public, you know, because you can only get so much of that from reading Facebook. It's kind of the same residents giving feedback on Facebook, but this allows a lot of residents who don't normally communicate with the city to communicate with the city.
So I think we've had a couple of good presentations on this before, and I think we understand pretty much what this will do for us, and I think there's value there. So I'd just like to go ahead and make a motion to authorize the city to enter into agreement with Qualtrics, subject to the conditions in the test report.
So I have a motion by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Second by Councilmember Anderson. Does anyone want to add any discussion?
I just want to make sure that we use it and take action. I mean, I don't want to pay for something just so we knowledge is great, but you know, the application of the knowledge, and that's how we're going to get a value out of it. And I mean, I look forward to using it. I like to give our residents as much opportunity to give feedback as possible, make it as easy as possible for them as well, and then use that information. So I'm in favor for it, but I just want to make sure that we actually take some actions implementing the information that we've received.
Can I address that real fast? The contract as it's set up right now is set to begin on March 29th. They're willing to be out here in the first couple of weeks. They will help us set up our platform and help us get our groups ready. So that by the end of May, when we're looking at making a large decision as far as public safety is concerned, if we feel the need, we can develop a survey that we can then put out to residents that we can then get valuable information as we move forward. So that's also something that's on there, but immediately on the horizon. I feel like this just right off the bat becomes a concern for us.
I think that's certain.
That's part of that, especially when this allows us to get that information from the residents.
Any other discussion? All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion passes. We will move on to item number 9, which is a review action on a resolution adopting fiscal year 2018 budget amendments. And let's see. Mr. Rose presenting, but my computer's being slow. Yes, Mr. Rose presenting.
Combine project years, roll the money forward, the city stretched the money in the past more than some cities that might. You can also allocate engineering expenses and different types of items to Class C revenue, and we're just trying to narrow the purpose even more to get the most out of our Class C roads money. And so in the past, because we're a small city, sometimes Jeff's trying not to go over budget, and he'll have a road project that he wants done by June, and the big contractors are saying, we're trying to squeeze you between the other big cities, and we want you to do it in July, and he's like, we've got to spend our money, or we're gonna, or whatever. So he'll be able to now, he can say, okay, I want to spend this money that I was going to spend in June, and the money I was going to spend next year. He can just save it, combine it, and have a bigger amount, and maybe it will be less mobilization costs, and hopefully we'll get a better deal. So I know Jeff's in favor, right? Thumbs up? Okay. So a lot of these in this current year to make this work, we're cutting some of the expenses that were left available. But when you if you saw the next year's budget, there will be funding for those in the next year as far as like snow removal and signs and stuff. But we had to make it balance. And we moved it over, and so that's how we balanced it. We've had a little bit more in building permits already this year, even though we're only two-thirds through the year. And so we just used some of the higher revenues to offset it slightly. And then each year, the Arts Committee and the Youth City Council has fundraisers. Sometimes it's only hundreds of dollars. Sometimes it might be over $1,000. But whatever they usually spend less than what they bring in after their budget is expended. And so it usually builds by a little bit each year. And so if we want to commit that every year, it's not restricted because there's when people pay for these things, they're not signing an agreement. So we have to commit as council if we want it not to be unrestricted funds. And then as part of Harvey Park, when we were doing the capital projects presentation last time, you're probably wondering, we don't have $1 million in our capital projects fund. Where is this money coming from? It's coming from the general fund mostly. $450,000 this year, and in the budget you'll see another large transfer to help get us through phase one. So that's how we're doing it, and there's no magic money out there. It comes from somewhere. So, and every year the golf fund does trades. Chase Media and Valpac have been our advertising partners. So it used to be 15,000, this year it's 17,000 trades. And we also had a storage bin where we paid half the cost to have the storage bin installed, and the other half we were able to trade some passes. So whenever we can have a golf improvement paid for with passes, Greg's staff does that, and then it saves us a lot of cash. So that's the 5,000 is in a storage bin for sand. And then recognizing that the park tax will start April 1st, we expect to see $11,000 in the current budget year. And I think that's, and then there's one below that. So you see right below that, the timing on the golf maintenance building was delayed. That budget in the prior year is just being carried forward to this year. And then the money coming from the general fund to the capital projects fund for Harvey is shown in the last line. Are there any questions?
So with the transfer of the 450 from the capital, from the general fund to the capital projects for Harvey, that lowers our percentage from 25 to
the reserve.
The reserve.
Well, throw a dart, but we should be at least 17 to 18%. It's not at 25 right now, it's about 21, 22, because we already transferred a lot to purchase the land last year. So we're not at 25, but I would anticipate some of that. And but if you look in your budget, when we get into the budget, we can pull up the budget, you can see we transferred 400 the last couple of years. This isn't being crazy. This is something we've done, and we've been able to keep it above 18%.
So our goal is going to be around 17, 18%.
At least 17% to follow best practices during good times.
Any other questions from the council? If not, I will take a motion.
I'll move. We adopt resolution number 3-221-18-8. Yeah. A resolution adopting the amended 2016-17 fiscal year budget for the city.
I have a motion by Councilmember Geddes. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. This is a resolution, so we need a roll call vote. Councilmember Bailey.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Miller.
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you. We will move on to item number 11, which is a discussion on the fiscal year 2019 General Fund Class C Roads and Park Funds. Mr. Lowe is presenting.
Look at this later, but this kind of has some of the dates involved with the budget. We started in early February, and usually for this next fiscal year, the budget will end, process will end in June. For those cities that decided to raise their property tax, they don't go close till August. And then during that time, my staff's trying to put together a budget document, which, and I can get away without it. So, in our next time we meet, because it's spring break, first in April, and then I have my conference following state council meeting, will be here. So, we'll meet May 1st, and we have to pass a preliminary budget. That's going to be the health fund, health debt service fund, water sewer fund. And we're getting new information all the time, and so we give the best information we can at each one. Hopefully not the major changes, but because we have a new person at over fire that's new to budgeting, I think we'll continue to see changes there. And but I'm hoping everything else, you won't see much changes, and you guys can look over. I gave you a comprehensive budget of all the funds today, and you can look over them the next month or so. And if you have any questions, you can contact Chandler or me and ask us those. So, what are challenges we have? We have the slowest growth of Utah County. We get maybe one new house every other month connection. Our city is, even though we do have some commercial, 75% of it is based on our population. Walmart has helped us pay for some costs in the last few years, but they are not everything. The city also had to do a paramedic fee to help pay for other different things. Our franchise taxes, which are your Questar, Rocky Mountain, and Comcast, have been flat or declining the last couple of years because of all the people doing solar and solar panels. So we've had some challenges, and we haven't had any property tax increases since since I've been here in the last 5 years. We have public safety contracts that usually go up, and we have our park maintenance contracts just went up significantly. We just added an arborist, and I'll go through that a little bit more. We're trying to retain city staff while the economy's crazy. And our legal costs from year to year have been volatile. And we're trying to stay on top of our infrastructure while our city gets older and trying to stay ahead on possible security for computer systems. What are things that have helped us? Class C equipment has increased lately, not as much as like the engineers say, but it's better than nothing. And we are looking at grants, for example. Having an arborist helps us get City Tree USA grants. We can get up to $8,000 match for not only cash, but volunteers and stuff, and so we're looking at things like that. We have possible unfunded mandates. Some of them didn't happen, like secondary meters, some do happen. And then we have all these fun things that we want to do for the city, like build a park, do dog parks, whatever it is, do arts, things. We have lots of things that we'd love to make our city better. The economy has been rocking and doing super high. If you're an employer, you're experiencing inflation because you're trying to hire new employees that are trying to live around here. My wife's been helping someone get their house ready to sell, and they have 30 offers on their house, and it was $30,000 over asking, you know, so pretty crazy right now. So the council's priorities back in February listed, summarized, were focused on capital improvements, maintenance, community services, administration. We have to deal with things we don't want to deal with, like affordable housing and public safety contracts. So here are some of the preliminary proposals. These are final, but these are just trying to do those, fulfill those priorities. So we just transferred $450,000. We're proposing another $400,000 drawdown next year of fund balance. We are increasing our road maintenance funding from $254,000 in this new fund to $360,000. And we're doing a lot of sidewalk type of maintenance that has to do with ADA in the next year through grants. Public safety, we've allocated 120, but that is just a placeholder because that number is changing everything.
Sure, I'll kind of say you can mention something about that.
Sure.
On that end, the number is up in the air, and they're planning on doing so. Mayor Reese, Councilmember Anderson, and Councilmember Geddes, so you're aware that the Lone Peak Board is planning on doing a budget open house work session on the 29th, next week, next Thursday night at 6:30. The location to be determined, but that's an important meeting, I feel, that we should all be in attendance at, as that budget is a big concern of staff's. So just wanted you to be aware of that.
Thursday at 6:30.
You should have received an email, so that information should be there as well.
We are making our zoning person, and it's also helping us in planning full time. Proposing a 3.5% increase for staff on average and our health insurance estimate from our broker right now is 10%. Previously presented tonight was a $6,000 increase for cultural events and arts. All our committees do a great job. They all would love to have more money, and we all want to say yes to everything, but sometimes we have to say no. We just do the balance of budget. Off election year, so we're saving some money there from not having an election. And we had some turnover. This is I'm very surprised to be looking at this, but this is the chart we show every year showing the trends on public safety for the last while. Dispatch had a little bump a couple of years ago in their building, their new building, and now it's gone back down to quite a bit. So our volume of calls must be lower than most cities. So right now we're about 700,000 with fire and 400,000 with police in our last year, and I think our police went up 3.5% the current year. And fire was probably 1% this last year. Historically on street maintenance, some of the spikes happen because sometimes when we tear up a road, bad things happen. And we have to fix it because the road's torn up. So, but we anticipate spending close to the peak from 2011 going forward. Some of the issues we have with the streets that we need that. These are just maintenance. This isn't maintenance. They're not being torn up. So they're doing an HA5 or overlay. And these are some of the older areas in the city that have the bad water lines. So there's a chance that there will be some repairs on these roads. I talked to Jeff and it's still better to do something than nothing, and we still have to work at replacing all our lines eventually, but he said if we have to do some patches on it, the HA5 will still be pretty effective. So. This shows what we're spent on park maintenance versus our golf operating capital outlay in the last few years. As our parks grow and we expand, the park maintenance is going to be more and more. Recently hired Wilkinson for approximately $150,000, now it's a 20%+ increase. We also at Public Works got bids in the last year for hardware services, and Rivendell's initial bid was $150,000 to get us caught up. But we negotiated it down to $10,000 to do a phased approach and focus on Heritage Park. We'd love to do the whole city at once, but it's just not there in the funding. So we also have he will also help us in planting new trees and taking care of new trees if we request his help, and he can help us with grants. I've asked the Parks Committee Chair Lloyd that when he plants trees to budget for an arborist supervised where he can get, Roy can get the trees for a service project for $200, we can get the arborist to plant them and buy them for $240. And so we have to sometimes look at if it's really worth it. Have volunteers do it if we're worried about the amount surviving. But some grants you have to have volunteers, so there's a balance there. But if there has been some complaints in the past that our trees have died and they haven't been taken care of, and so if people do want city to take responsible, we have to make sure they're planting correctly and they're getting them, they're healthy when they're planting, and so there has to be a little more control over that. This is the Parks Committee request. Their last year's budget was $85,25 when I started at the city. I think all they had funded was beautification work for yard and lawn, and it's kind of grown a lot, and it's all good stuff, and there's nothing bad on there, but there's nothing bad on any of the committees. There's nothing bad that the Family Festival asked for. There's nothing bad that Arts asked for. So I think it's sufficient. And one of the things I'm doing to try to help the budget is I just applied for a True Utah grant. I put up $1,500 to cover some cost of the trees that would stretch out their service money. So we're trying to stretch the money without, when we have so much demands on public safety and streets, we just don't have a lot of money for these fun things. And so I look at these all as wants, not really needs, but you can, if you want to fund, or if you want to give the committee direction, he said if I limited it to $8,500, you would take out the second set of Christmas lights. But if you want to give them a different direction and say, maybe we don't need to give gift cards for spectacular, or something else, you can give them that direction or just say, go ahead, spend it however you want. It's up to you guys.
What is the session training do?
I was thinking the same thing.
That is the thing that Ryan just talked about, where it's very valuable. There's a guy in our city that's an expert, does it at UU, and he has to buy some materials for his classes that he presents. So, I actually think that's probably the most valuable thing.
What about the garden tours?
That's just like checking out people's gardens.
Yeah, the idea was to have people with excellent backyards have the opportunity to share that.
They were getting paid for it?
You get the $25 gift card from Skinner's.
Could you sell tickets to that?
I think, Brian, do you remember? I thought this was like to go outside of the city.
I wasn't there for this, the discussion on this one.
Yeah, this came up last year when I was on the committee. It was to see the gardens in the city.
Okay.
And people have done.
Yes, I know we're doing.
How do you get access to the backyard? I'm just curious. What's with the Fort of Mountain?
Up the fence.
I don't know. It's, I mean, they're all.
They would be asked to open up their yard and people would come.
Actually, I got a sign outside for it.
Yeah.
These guys aren't talking to you.
That sounds like a nice
dish. Yes.
Could you please talk into the microphone? We're having a hard time recording.
So,
no, the council.
I'm just saying they had $500 like 4 years ago. So I feel like he can make it work, and we can try to help with grants. And if there's not one thing that stands out that you really want over other things, I can give him direction on that, what your favorite things are that you really like. Don't have to focus on the negative, what you really want out of this committee.
So one more question for me is, what is their service day project this year?
Right now, the grant that we applied for we have to supervise it. And so we ask for May 18th for people. And our second choice was May
12th.
It was 12th.
12th was where?
19th then?
Yeah.
It was the Saturdays. Second choice was Saturday before Mother's Day, which is next Sunday.
But what is the project?
They want to plant 25 trees throughout the city. But if he doesn't get the grant, he won't have any. He'll have maybe for 10 trees.
So if I'm just going to lay on this one, the things that I don't think are super important personally, because I don't, there are the spectacular, the light of Christmas, and the beautification. I don't think people do their yards to get an award.
Yeah, you can still recognize them like they do.
Right, and I don't think that, you know, the $25 gift certificate, it's sort of like, do we really need to give it to them? Put a sign out and acknowledge them. You know, they spent like hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars on plants. It's not like, you know, maybe they appreciate it, but I don't think so. Yeah,
I know what you mean.
I agree with that, and the things that those gets me that I like about what this committee does is the first of all, the roundabout's beautiful. I love that they've spent a lot of time and effort on the roundabout, both how it looks in the summer and what they've done at Christmas time. But the community breakfast, the Santa party, Santa night, those are opportunities for the community to come together, and we're providing events for the opportunity to come together. So I would prefer to take some of the awards that we give out to the 25th and combine those to do another event instead of the $25 gift card.
Thanks for putting the positive spin on what I said. Because I really meant the same thing. I mean, Boyd does a great job. You know?
I am a little worried that he's built something that no one can replicate once he's done.
Right, it's quite,
he's
done a great
job. Quite a unicorn.
He doesn't get to be done. He's going to do this forever, right?
Oh, yeah. So at least 15 more years.
Great. That would be the feedback I have. Any other feedback from the council?
No, I agree with the awards. I'm not sure. I mean, I won the beautification award one time, and it was the sign that mattered, putting it in my yard. My neighbor stole it and put it there. So it meant something. You know? So I don't think the prize money is important.
Okay. Thanks for the feedback. I appreciate it.
That sign does mean something because my husband is so bummed that he never can have that sign in our yard. It just kills him.
The signs are pretty expensive, so we might want to do a budget adjustment for ourselves.
I actually saw one of those in someone's garage the other day where the garage door was open. I saw it sitting in there. Oh, and I can't remember where it was.
Over on the street.
It's over on the
street.
It's over on the
garage. I was like,
this just shows you some of the trends. We're trending down. We had a couple of rough years lately. Our general revenues, talked about it a little earlier, most of them are flat, except for sales tax, because the economy is doing so well right now. There's some uncertainty going forward because of the new legislation, so we budgeted more conservative than, and we do anyways, but I'll talk about that.
I was maybe here to bring this up later, but do we have any idea, estimate on what the hit for the affordable housing bill is going to be to us?
That's why I go to trainings.
Okay. That's fine. I was just curious.
No, I haven't seen anything, sorry. So the dotted line's the current year, and it's been better than last year every month except first. Once again, the dotted line is the current year, and it's kind of close to last year, but it's been lower a couple months. And Questar is higher, but it's mostly just rocking out. It's been a little lower.
building revenues is the word, is pretty close to last year. Just for the new council people that don't understand why we do what we do in this building. Originally, this building was set up to be a rec center slash oak house type of thing, and so you had fitness classes on this floor, and we didn't have a finished basement, and it opened right before I started here. At that time, the golf course was bringing in around $666,000. Right after it opened, at the new building, it increased $30,000 that first year. The city at the time had a running deficit over $2 million at the golf course. We had about that much money in our capital projects fund, and we paid that off. And from then on, we budgeted a subsidy to golf, realizing that the golf most likely was going to need a subsidy. Our grill was losing about $2,000 a month, and that's when we started inviting people outside of our city to run the grill. And these floors weren't great for fitness. They're hard on people's hands and on their feet. And so we did a dance floor so that we could still do some fitness type of classes. But those classes weren't popular enough to cover the cost. We moved it to a private person to do it for a while, and then that went away. So we built this addition. It also helped us meet ADA requirements to get people down into the basement. And we did some privatizing partnerships. There are some things that got dropped, like Lego League, that weren't covering their costs. And we added some other events, like community breakfast in Santa. And we added some instructional classes, like gardening and other gardening classes here. And theater and all these other things. So it's kind of evolved over time. 2015, our events revenues peaked at $257,000. Then we asked if we could have more nights for residents, and there was a decline in the next 2 years. We were able to raise rates for larger events this last year, and events is now trending higher than last year. Our golf revenues have grown over $100,000, and we're paying more in taxes than we ever did before. Our recreation programs have grown from $70,000 to $155,000. And so our grants department, though it's a little, it might look like things are a little flat right now, they've come a long way. And right now we have green fees, pro shop, everything, and Wade was sick and gone for a few months, so that we were able to maintain green fees, and pro shop's pretty close is great. And then our events set around, like I said, are about for the year. So significant revenue budget changes, sales tax revenues, that's looking at the last 2 years and what we think we're going to get this current year, and I drop that down to be flat for the rest of the year. So $55,000 is assuming it's flat from the rest of the year sales tax. So I try to be conservative. And telecom has been trending down to about only $15,000. Anticipated to go up to 25, but that could go up next year if the gas tax education funding. Also, our new garbage and recycling contract went up, and so there are some minimal costs to keep with that, and we're anticipating a little more preparation program expense.
Are there any questions?
This year or last year, I mean, we have at least another 50 plus residents from the Bridgestone community that now pay property taxes. Was that reflected this year or last year?
Probably was this last year.
So we haven't seen that yet.
Mark, the property tax settlement is the end of this month, March 31st.
So then you'll see it at that point.
So I'll know for sure. We're training to hire on property tax, but I don't like to show it because they withhold money and they want to make sure anyone that appeals and all that stuff. So we should see some, but I usually just budget about $5,000. That's our normal. So hopefully it's more.
Hopefully, yeah, I think it should be more.
Something, yeah. We'll see.
I know all those residents.
I know. We'll see. I think we've got maybe 10,000 in a couple of years. We've gotten 10,000 in a couple of years, but we haven't. There's also been some people that we've allowed to annex out. There's people that can. If there's people are fighting what the value of their house is, we need to use money.
Tough call this year.
It will be tough. They're pretty conservative on their numbers. And we'll go over any questions to you when you guys are too tired to think about it. It's kind of late for us.
Any other questions on that budget presentation?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you, Cheryl. We will move on to item number 12, a discussion on the 2018 legislative session. Mr. Goodwin is presenting.
I'm going to go through this really fast. There were a number of bills that the staff were tracking up for the legislative session. It's not sure it wrapped up a few weeks ago. And I want to say thank you to those of you that reached out to our local representatives on various issues. I know there were a few hot button items. I know somebody reached out, so thank you. Thank you, Mayor Reese, for all the time. I know you were up at the Capitol quite a bit advocating on behalf of Cedar Hill, so thank you for that. In your packet, there's a number of bills that it shows whether they passed, whether they failed. And we kind of, as we as we're watching, we want to see what the impact is going to be on our not only our budget, but on maybe on policies as well. On one of the big ones is firework. It's a legislation on fireworks restrictions. So it clarifies that when a firework may be discharged and when a municipality may prohibit a person from discharging fireworks. You may remember last year, those of you who were on the council, that we adopted a map. Well, that map now needs to be adopted by May 1st, giving residents ample time to know where they cannot do discharge fireworks. So we have that map ready. That will be on the April 17th agenda for adoption for the upcoming fireworks season. Another big issue that was discussed at the Hill this last year was regarding moderate income housing. And staff, we've been working on a moderate income housing element draft to take to the Planning Commission and ultimately to the Council. That got put on hold during the legislative session just as we were watching that. So with this new bill, we're going to start wrapping that up again, so you should see that eventually coming for the Planning Commission and for yourselves. And then one thing that the city will need to establish is a building official appeal board. So when Jeff or another inspector goes out on site to inspect a building, and if there's a disputation between the contractor and the city on the building code violation, that developer, that contractor can then appeal that decision to this appeal board. So that's something that we will be coming to the City Council with a recommendation on who should be on that appeal board.
Is that HB 250?
That is.
Are you some?
It is.
Page 303.
What's the 303? It's 310.
Professional licensing amendments?
Is it the professional licensing amendments one?
That's 310.
I think it is 310.
Yes.
Professional, with the modified provisions related to the building inspector and back in the building. So we're watching that. And then last year, we saw a big decrease in our general fund revenues on municipal business licensing. If a home-based business no longer had a measurable impact on the neighbors around it, beyond just people pulling up one at a time, then you could no longer require them to receive a city business license. Well, the city established a set of policies where we were no longer requiring them to get that business license, but we were charging them if they wanted to be set up as a business for tax purposes. We were charging them an administrative fee, and then we were charging them a $5 fee to print off that license and mail it to them. This bill basically continues to allow us to do that, so the policies and procedures that we set up as a city are good going forward, but it seems like there are a number of communities that have not acted on this, so this bill, I think, is more directed towards that. And then finally, the last one I want to touch on was the homeless shelter funding amendments. This SB 235 will have an impact on our sales tax portion that we receive from the state. So before that is sent to the local the municipalities, the state is going to take 1.8% of that sales tax, the local option sales tax, to fund additional public safety personnel for communities where there are homeless shelters. In discussing that bill with Charlotte, we're already budgeting our sales tax on a 3-year average, so we should be fine with projected sales tax numbers going forward. However, we will just not see that 1.8%. What the fiscal impact is to be determined. So, any questions on legislation?
I'm just going to add on the fireworks. In addition to the map, just so everyone knows, they shortened the number of days that fireworks can be lit. So it used to be 7 days, it's now 4. It's 2 days before the holiday, the day of, and the day after.
Want to move on?
Yeah. Okay, so we will move on to item number 13, discussion on water conservation and enforcement efforts.
All right, before our next council meeting, we will have the pressurized irrigation turned on the night before, which we're planning on turning it on April 16th. Is April 15th is which is typically the start of the irrigation season, is a weekend. We've had water restrictions for 3 years. We have 4 years of usage data that we can rely on. And if I'm just going to be frank, water restrictions do not curb water usage. You can see that in 2014 on that chart.
While you're getting that, are these numbers?
Jeff, are these numbers directly from meters, or are we estimating some of this?
These are directly.
This is meters of production, not necessarily meters of usage. We have.
Because some of this is pumped into basins, the golf course.
There is a very small part when we overflow culinary water into the irrigation tank that is not metered, but it's usually only for a few days.
So it's pretty accurate, is what you're saying.
It is quite accurate.
All right, thank you. So this right here shows week over week usage, and you can see that early in the spring and late in the fall, you have fairly low usage for week over week meter reads. But then in the heat of the summer, it gets quite high. These dips, this purple line is 2015. You can see that in 2015, we had a very wet spring. So you saw a lot of people turn off their sprinklers. Same thing in 2014 in about August, we had a very wet August, but that same year we had a very dry late June and early July. So that's the trend week over week. As we watched the cumulative fresh reservation usage throughout the year, same thing. You can see that that wet spring kind of leads to a flatter purple line here, and the wet summer in 2014, you see all of a sudden a dip right there. So 2014, this blue line right here shows the year that we had was the last year we had no restrictions. The next 2 years, we saw about a 3% decrease in our usage, this green line and this purple line. Well, those years also had a wet spring, so you can kind of see that it came under the, if you're going to use 2014 as a trend line, you can see that it due to the wet spring, you had a slower start to the season, and then it kind of mirrors the usage. Last year, 2017, we had a very hot and dry summer, so it mirrored 2014 and then kept going, and then where 2014 had a very wet fall, 2017 had a very dry fall. So you can see that those numbers, even though we had watering restrictions, we actually used more water with watering restrictions than we did without. Now, on the enforcement, in the years past, we just hired people to drive around the city at odd hours of the day and weekend and issue violations. And it is fairly time consuming with staff. In 2015, 216 people received the first violation. In 2016, we had 218. 2017, we had 150. I think we started to enforce a little bit later last year. We don't use water violations as a revenue source. That's not the point of, we don't budget any money for watering violations. The point of watering violations, and the point with any really big zoning citation or violation is self-correction. We want people to be educated on what we're trying to do and what the point of the zoning code is. We've now had these watering restrictions now for 3 years. It shouldn't be a surprise to people that we have been in place. They know. But I wanted you to be aware as we enter the watering season, I feel like as a staff, as a council, we need to be brainstorming ideas of how to better educate residents on the water usage. Because the only dip we've seen in our usage over the past few years is weather related. We don't see a savings based on people trying to follow a mandated schedule. Typically, if you have those people that want to water every single day, they're told that you can only water Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so they're going to water early Monday morning and late Monday night to make up that Tuesday that they can't water. So any questions, concerns, comments?
So one question I have, I know this is, again, it relates back to this is not based on per capita usage, so no. We don't know for sure what the per capita is.
No.
Because per capita would make it, who knows? I mean, we've increased a little bit of residents over.
We could break this down on per capita usage, but without meters, it's really kind of an arbitrary statistic. We could, and the fact of the matter is, we could be blaming residents and ourselves at the golf course saying, we got to use less water. Or at the same time, we may have a water leak in the system, but because it's not metered on the end, we know what we're putting into the system, but we can't report where it's all going. So there could be a leak in the system that we just don't know about.
So I'd like to say that we continue to educate as best we can. It's never going to get everybody in, and it's never going to be perfect until we're forced to put in meters sometime.
Yeah. Speaking of that, if you followed the legislative session, there was SB 204, which was Senator Henry Bill, that would have required cities to install secondary meters over the course of the next 8 to 10 years. Based on various issues of the bill. I'm going to call this one right now that due to legislative creep over the years, what I'm going to call it, is eventually that bill will be passed. Much like the municipal business licensing bill that I referenced in the last presentation, that bill came before the legislature year over year and slowly garnered enough support until it had a tipping point where it was passed. I believe that 204 is going to be back next year, the year the following year. I think the last thing that I wanted to talk about was, and Councilmember McGinnis can attest to this, with this dry summer and with our issues that we had last year with Copper Well, given this high usage, that is even reflecting a massive decrease in usage on the golf course. If you remember in June and July last year, our golf course had a number of dead spots because we put them on severe water infections. So we're hoping to not have to do that this year, but nonetheless, that's even with the city cutting back drastically on water and golf course, this is still that's how much water we're using.
So I like the idea that the city's leading on the effort. The city actually is. We're trying to put in the meters. We're trying to get the information out. So the city is leading, and it makes it much easier for residents to follow when they see the city's sprinklers aren't running when it's raining. That's like the most common. Yeah, I mean, we hear all the time. And I believe as we're doing that and working with what Councilmember Gittes said with educating residents, we'll see improvements that way. That really is the best way to go. I don't think we change the odd-even watering. I think we just keep that in place. It's kind of ingrained now. And then as a side note, because I'm curious, I pulled some historical weather data from actually Alpine. They have stuff that covers all of this. And each one of those discs can be verified by how much rain there was.
Yeah.
So that really is the biggest factor. And I think we come around some ideas around educating specifically about not watering when it's raining. We'll see those dips even bigger, and we'll see their impact.
So, as part of our education efforts, and I know we're sending out those weekly emails, one thing I think that we really should do is emphasize that those smart controller rebates are offered every year, but they only offer so much money every year, so it's first come, first serve. Once that money's gone, it's gone. So I would really encourage our residents to take advantage of purchasing a smart controller and using the rebate to, I think it covers almost the entire cost of the smart controller in a lot of instances, depending on the controller, obviously.
There's a lot of controllers on there for this too.
Right. There are several options that meet the criteria for it, but that, because it does all the work for you, it automatically shuts off when it's going to be raining, and that will help quite a bit. And so I would encourage our residents to take advantage of those rebates.
I'm not sure that we did a good job of publicizing that last year, right?
It's from the water conservation district.
Yes,
you're right. Going back to Councilmember Ellsworth's statement, this last year, I think sometimes people equate a really wet winter with more water availability. We still haven't talked about it forever. But we really had a wet winter last year, so I think people thought, okay, I can also look because there is water. But that's not always the mentality that we should have, because we do need to replenish our aquifer as we pull more out than we're putting in years like this year. So I think it's like my last point. Is there any other questions that I can
Jeff,
ideas? Jeff?
I'd like to make one comment on this, just the final discussion here on the smart controllers. Well, I think they are a very good tool to use in the management of the water. What we recognized after the city invested in smart controllers last season was that they really did no good because we had no precipitation. They're only a benefit if we have regular precipitation. They functioned, but there was no reason for them to turn off.
From our point, though, if they turn off our zones and when it is raining, we do get less complaints, so that is a benefit.
Yes.
Well, and even for residents, I mean, I know, and I think most people are like this. You in the spring, you go and you set your sprinkling system, and you don't worry about it again until it's time to turn it off in the fall. And so, and if you're on vacation or whatever the case is, people are busy, and so having the ability to be able to set it and not worry about it because the smart controller is going to worry about it for you is a nice feature. Plus, I think most of it you can still control from your cell phone.
Great upstairs. Gotta get the rebate.
We won't catch the outlier years like this last year where it was totally dry. But I think we can at least improve the dips and let them know what we do have the rain coming in.
Before we adjourn, Mr. Goodwin, a quick two quick things. The council has asked that we have a future agenda item being a discussion on the future of St. Andrews. We could add that. And then I don't think we officially canceled our April 3rd meeting.
We're going to do that later this week.
Okay.
Like tomorrow.
Council, just so you're aware, it's spring break. I'm assuming a lot of people are going to be gone. So our plan is to not have a meeting that first week in April because it's Alpine School District spring break. So unless you were all dying to have a meeting that week,
that's I'm going to call in from Disney then.
We're going to plan on canceling that one. All right, we are done. If I can have a motion to adjourn.
I move that we adjourn.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
All right, then we are adjourned. Thank you.